Ferguson isn't trying to fix any of these problems. If he was, he would appoint people that are good and have track records at fixing these problems. Yeah. They don't care. This is about the accumulation of power.
Zach, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. It's getting too chilly outside for my taste. And now it's like the year's almost over and time is just flying by. And it's quite depressing, actually. All right. Yep. Are we in for an icy future when it comes to Wall Street? So you've been talking for, gosh, probably 2 years now about really the stock market feeling like it's sort of built on this house of cards. And you have things that are just valued at these crazy levels. So Andrew Ross Sorkin, who's a financial journalist, he put something out and I wanted to get your take on it. He said there are worrying similarities between Wall Street today and Wall Street before the 1929 crash. According to CBS News, he appeared on 60 Minutes. He said, after nearly a decade spent studying the most famous stock market crash in history, financial journalist Andrew Ross Sorkin warns that the Wall Street of today echoes the market of 1929, when highs preceded a massive slump leading to the Great Depression. Artificial intelligence and technology have contributed to a remarkable boom in recent years, but Sorkin said today's economy is being propped up by the AI boom, and it's too soon to tell if this is a sugar rush, a short-term unsustainable boost to the markets. But Sorkin is positive there's a crash coming. What do you say?
Yes and no. So the best way I can respond to this is, first of all, let me state that 95% of people that talk about this kind of stuff or that respond to something like this, there is some level of personal bias or them talking their book, meaning it's amazing how when you ask them what you think is going to happen and then you look at their portfolio, they line up, right? Mm. And that's not a bad thing. It probably should be that way. But I'm going to try to take a stab at this and talk only about facts and try to inject as little conjecture as possible.
Okay.
Are there similarities between now and 1929? Yeah, on many different levels. So first and foremost, valuation. Second, retail involvement. Third, obviously fraudulent things that are being accepted as normal. In 1929, you had things like bucket shops. And a bucket shop was where a lot of times people went in there and thought they were investing in stocks. They were just ignorant. But you weren't actually investing in stocks. You were betting on them. So it was like a bookmaker for stocks, right? Flip over and a lot of what you see going on with SPACs, cryptocurrency, a lot of similarities there, right? Meaning you're betting on vapor, you're betting on price go up. At the end of the day, you own nothing, right? So there's a lot of similarities there. The other thing is that at that time, that was a very extended economic cycle. The reason why that's important is, you know, if you think about fraud like trash, recessions are when the trash gets taken out. Okay, so the less frequently you have recessions, the more the trash stacks. It's like New York City when the garbage people strike, right? The trash starts stacking up. So inevitably, you know that the fire is going to burn hotter when it finally comes. Yeah. Okay, so the other thing that you have on the overvaluation side, and this is something really important people need to think about, okay? You've got a company like Walmart, okay, that is growing at 6% a year, and its stock is currently trading at 42 times earnings. Hmm. Okay, to give you an idea of how ridiculous that is, remember, they're also a retailer, so their margins are going to be between 3 to 5%. Okay, so it's not like you can go, well, yeah, but look at their margins. And you're like, yeah, they're really bad, right? So, but when you think about that, okay, typically on average, the average company in the S&P 500 is going to grow around 6 to 7% a year. And the long-term average price to earnings ratio is about 16 to 17, okay? They're growing 6% a year, so lower than the average growth rate with lower than average margins in a notoriously volatile business that's unattractive, single-digit margins across the board, large capital investments. And people are paying more than double the long-term average for the stock market. The reason why that's important is you look at them, they're an $800 billion company. Look at Apple, very much the same way. People aren't used to that. Okay, Apple's growing at a similar rate with margins that are 15%. To give people a concept, we own an airliner that has 17.5% margins, better than Apple, okay? Apple stock trading for over 40 times earnings. My point in bringing this up is if you just took those corporations back to a level, a valuation that they have both averaged, they've actually averaged lower than that, but you'd be looking at 50 to 60% drops in the price of their stock. Okay. Then you look at how big those companies are. That's the equivalent of $2 trillion of market cap just written out of people's portfolios. Right. So, and that would be normal. Like that isn't anything bad happening. That's those companies trading at a valuation that would be a long-term historical average. Right. Now, I'm not even talking about the Teslas of the world that are trading at 250 times earnings or Palantir trading at 650. But yes, that potential is there. Now, let me flip around and say something to the other side. There's a reason, in my opinion, that gold is going up, and there's a reason why we have been so adamant over the last year and a half about gold and gold miners being the best performing sector so far this year, up 130%. It's one of the reasons we've been adamant about it, because one thing that is very different about 1929, the conditions I just laid out, they are similar to 1929. That is not what created the 85% drop. What created the 85% drop was the policy response. So in the face of that recession hitting and that stock market crash, the central banks actually increased interest rates with no FDIC insurance backing. And so banks started to go under. You had a national run on banks. The money supply shrunk by like 30% that fast, and you were in a depression. So they will not make that mistake this time. Meaning, keep in mind, now, do I think we need to be careful? Absolutely. People are paying prices for things that they are not worth that. That is called a bubble. People lose a lot of money in bubbles, right? But the opposite will happen. We just went through COVID. Okay. When you go back and look at the great financial crisis from top to bottom, that was a 3.8% reduction in the economy. Okay. During COVID, in that one quarter, it was a 25% on an annualized basis, a 25% drop in GDP. And the stock market finished up 16 that year. Okay. My point is, you have to be prepared for both in this environment. You have to be prepared for a stock market that doubles from here, because like I said, look at gold. What gold, in my opinion, is telling you is the recognition that the United States and other governments around the world aren't going to stop printing and can't stop printing. That's what gold is telling you. In an environment like that, it is virtually impossible for the stock market to crash 85%. But could it crash 50 to 60? Absolutely. And there's so many easy ways that, and very costless ways that don't even really limit your upside, that can protect you from 50 to 60% of those potential losses. And that's the thing that kills me, Brandy, is avoiding those kinds of outcomes is relatively easy. And unfortunately, the average retail portfolio is sailing right into the storm as opposed to batten down the hatches. But it's a crazy market for sure, and he's not wrong.
Yeah, people can't just like blindly ride this, things like this out. They need to be aware of what's happening and obviously, talk to
And
someone like you who knows what they're talking about.
there are a lot of cracks right now. Okay, so this market is behaving extraordinarily unhealthy. It keeps going up, which people are excited about, but an increasing amount of stocks under the surface are dropping. The other thing that we're seeing very frequently, which is freaking me out, is you're seeing equity markets positive, stock markets positive, while volatility is positive. We could get into a 5-hour conversation about why that's concerning. That has been one of our biggest telltale signs about trouble incoming into markets. So there's a lot to be concerned about at this moment, but also in the months to come.
Gosh, crazy stuff. All right, let's get to some watchdogging. I know you
Let's do
love
it.
talking about Sound Transit and the boondoggle that is Sound Transit. So, they just announced, obviously, they've been operating in this massive deficit. I mean, has it ever even been on time and on budget? I don't think so. So they have a $30 billion shortfall, way behind schedule on so many projects. So what are they going to do? Well, they want to increase property taxes 1%. They don't need to go back to voters to be able to do that. They can just hike it. What do you think it's going to take? A boondoggle that's been this long in the making, this far behind schedule, this far over budget, continually raising prices and taxes. What do you think it would take for the average person to wake up to it and just say, oh, we're not doing this anymore?
I would like to think that you're getting close. And I think if you asked me before the last election, I thought that we were perhaps closer than we were. So I don't know. I don't know what will wake these people up. And again, like you and I have said so many times, I don't even say woken up in terms of a political change of heart. I mean, just woken up in the sense that you want to vote for somebody that isn't just completely robbing you and lying to your face about it.
Yeah.
You know, when I say robbing, I don't think that Jay Inslee was necessarily taking, you know, Sound Transit money and putting it in his pocket. But in my opinion, when you operate in such a profligate and irresponsible way and you waste so much taxpayer dollars, you know, that is synonymous to stealing from the social treasury,
yeah,
or the public treasury. And I don't know. It's one of the most incredible things in my life watching the governments of specifically Washington, Oregon, and California do what they do, and watching this abusive relationship between the constituency and the elected officials, and how it's just this kind of hit me again, Ike, attitude from the constituency, and they just take it. I don't know.
100%. I always compare it to like a domestic violence situation where it's like, oh, I won't do it again. And on our show this week, I talked about Dow Constantine, who's now the head of Sound Transit, makes like $500,000 a year. And for people who aren't familiar, he was the former King County executive. And this is a guy who failed at every aspect of his job when he was a politician and spent the county into a crisis, and then got handed on his way out the door a $500,000 job running an agency that when he was the head of the county, he helped run into the ground. And it's like, oh my gosh. And people barely batted an eyelash. I mean, the media that's supposed to kind of call out like, hey, wait a second. You know, he made horrible financial decisions when he was in charge of King County and also sat on the board of Sound Transit. Why would you put him in charge of it? And then just this past week, I said, no one's ever mastered the art of failing up quite like Dow Constantine has. But he got this job with Sound Transit. And then Bob Ferguson, the governor, just put him on the UW Board of Regents. So he's just getting just so many steps up when he should be relegated to the dustbin of Washington state political history.
Yeah. Here's the other thing about that I find so unfortunate. It's that right there. So if you're a young person out there and you're sitting there going, how do you stand against government being bigger and doing more for the folks and helping people out? And I hate Trump and all that kind of stuff. If you're that kind of person out there, I sympathize with why you think that, especially if you're a young person. But I want you to look at this situation right here. This situation perfectly illustrates why people like Brandy and I don't believe government is the solution to every problem. Mm-hmm. Forget about the politics here. Okay, look at this guy. What on this guy's resume says that he has any business running a budget like that or can deliver any value whatsoever? It has nothing to do with his political alliance. Look at what he's done. Okay. He's a lawyer that has run everything he has touched has been an abject failure and been run into the ground. Okay. This, they're not even trying. They're telling you who they are and they're not listening. Ferguson isn't trying to fix any of these problems. If he was, he would appoint people that are good and have track records at fixing these problems. Yep. They don't care. This is about the accumulation of power. That is it. It's about pointing people that will go along with their votes and their decisions. They don't care if anything gets done because they're rich. They've got nice vacations. Their backyard's been redone. Their kid has the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip. They don't care about you. And they're showing you that, right? It'd be like going out and hiring a garbage man to be the lead chef of your 5-star restaurant. You are setting yourself up for failure and it probably won't go well. And the fact that I said that does not mean that I'm anti-garbage men, right? It just, you just sit there and you go, there you go, there's your answer.
Yeah, well, and also the reason he gets elevated to all this is clear. You know, he had talked about or had been widely considered to be a candidate for governor. And I think he stepped aside to allow Bob Ferguson to just sort of have an easier campaign where he could spend less money. And now Bob Ferguson and the Democrats are rewarding him for it. And it's coming at the, on the backs of working class Washingtonians who are going to see their property taxes go up and are going to see nothing for it. I mean, the quickest way to fix the woes of Sound Transit would be to privatize it. No private enterprise would ever allow a project like they would have abandoned it by now because it wouldn't have made any sense financially. But when the taxpayers are footing the bill for it, nothing's off the table. No hole is too deep.
No, and that's the, you know, that's the whole sad part of it. You hit the nail on the head. Nope. Like, if everybody is so afraid of privatize, you know, the word privatized, and you go, guys, that here's the deal. The reason it works, and especially in situations like this, the reason it works better is because somebody's butt's on the line.
Yep.
It's that simple, right? And if you fail, there is no upward fail. There's only bankruptcy and devastation. And guess what? That's a pretty good motivator, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, you know, I know the guys that run, you know, I've got several clients and friends that run construction companies that do that kind of work. And I just laugh looking at the overruns going, they've never had a job that's had a third of those issues, yeah. right? And, but look how those contracts are given out. Look at those, you know, you like you just said right there, look at that whole dance between Ferguson and Dow Constantine. All of that was to benefit them at your cost, pure and simple. Yeah. Those moves had nothing to do with what was good for the constituency. That was both of them making sure their nests were feathered at your cost. And that's not a political observation. That's what happened.
Yeah, 100%. And it's unfortunate. And, you know, voters are the ones who gave them the authority to be able to increase the property taxes by 1% without going back to them. And so, you know, the voters are not innocent in all of this. But ultimately, the media, if the media did its job, none of this would be happening.
Well, and there's another great irony of the incredible constituency we have in Washington. We're going to vote down property tax and tax increases generally, and we're going to vote in people that hike taxes.
Yep.
Go figure.
Yeah, makes no sense. All right, no. We always end the show talking about money moves, although I think we started the show with that. But the state of Florida making some significant money moves. So Governor Ron DeSantis says the state of Florida, since he took office, so I think he's coming up on 8 years in office, has retired 50% of its total debt from the last 180 years. So in about an 8 year span, under his leadership, he says the state has retired 50% of its total debt going back 180 years. He said they did that by buying back bonds at a discount. So the state cut interest rates. And now they have the lowest per capita debt of any state in the United States.
It's funny. If you want to understand what they're doing, they're effectively doing the opposite of what the federal government is doing. Right. So we're buying back debt. And the really cool thing about that is especially their long-term debt. You know, I'm sure they termed it out. We were at 0% interest rates for a long time. So there's probably a lot of debt out there floating around where they're paying, you know, 2.5% to 3.5% on it. Interest rates go up and that debt loses a substantial amount of value. So for instance, when the state of Florida issued that debt, all bonds, and we say bonds debt, same thing. Just another word for the same deal, automobile versus car. But when the state of government, they issue those in $1,000 increments, okay? So they issue that bond, they get paid $1,000. Interest rates go up like they do, that bond loses about 30 to 40% of its value. So now instead of trading at $1,000, it's trading at, you know, $600, $700, somewhere in there. So they got $1,000 when they issued it, they turned around and bought it back for $600 or $700 and the debt's gone, right? So they basically got $1,000 for 600. And it brilliant move. The US government is doing the exact opposite. So we're buying back our debt, but enabling us, so the Federal Reserve bought back a bunch of debt, but that just enabled us to print more. So our debt went up even faster, effectively.
Yeah.
So, but no, great move on their part. And that's what a responsible government should be doing. And quite honestly, you know, John Maynard Keynes gets a really bad shake, you know, Keynesian economics, but even he advocated that where he said, look, you can spend deficits when an economy is expanding, what you should be doing is you should be building up surpluses when an economy is expanding, like has been the case since DeSantis took over. And then when things start slowing down, that's when you should run a deficit to help the economy, buy back debt, do kind of the things that Florida is doing. So yeah, that's, I wish everybody was doing that.
Why wouldn't they? If you can do, like in a state like Washington that's facing such a crisis, do they just not care to pay down the debt?
They have no desire to. Money is power,
Yeah.
right? And so the greater the debt pile gets, the greater level of income that's needed, or the greater level of justification they have to raise taxes, the greater levels of control they have on the underlying economy. I mean, you and I live here in the state, and when you say things like that, it sounds conspiratorial. But if you live here and you watch the policies roll out of Olympia on a regular basis, and you watch the impacts they have, you cannot come to any other conclusion than it's if they were genuinely trying to do the things that they said they were genuinely trying to do, on accident, the success rate would have to be higher. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, just on accident. Like, and nobody can miss, like, you may not be the best dart thrower, but if I give you 20, you're going to hit the board at least once, right? Use that analogy. We gave them a handful of darts and they somehow ended up on the roof. You know what I mean? Like, you can't explain it.
Yeah, you would have to, I mean, you have to try to fail that bad. So it shows you what they're doing is intentional, because no one could accidentally fail that bad that often.
No, but the one thing you can say for them is they bat for a hell of an average. You know what I mean? It's impressive. I mean, they're consistent.
And here we are, and for some reason we're not moving to Florida. It's really weird. I don't know what's wrong with us, Zach. One day, all of us, Nicole, me, you, the fam, we'll just pack it up. We'll caravan in U-Hauls to Florida and we'll just give up.
Either that, or it'll be like the last eight people, like sitting up on somebody's roof, just like hurling insults down at the crowds of Antifa that rule our streets.
Just throwing empty wine beer bottles until they come and swarm us, and the end is there.
I'm sure you ladies sympathize, but there is kind of an indignant, stubborn part of it where you're like, you know what, man? To hell with you. I'm not going anywhere. This is my home too, you know?
Oh, I
So.
agree. That is a big part of it, is, we just don't have it in us to give up. So, all right, my friend, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me. Fun as always.